Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, tell me, doctor, where are we going this time? I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Joe, I've got a question for you, okay? I've really been thinking about this for a while. If I had to nail you down and say, what movie that involves time travel do you feel really gets it right? What's the best depiction of time travel in the movies? What would you say?
Well, I don't know if it's possible to get time travel right in the movies,
right?
Because I'm not sure if it's possible to actually do it.
Like, period, right?
The movie that convinces me the most is a little indie sci-fi movie called Primer. Have you all seen this?
I have not seen Primer, no.
So in your version, time travel involves getting a storage unit.
Yeah. So you rent a U-Haul and you put a little box in it and you go sleep in the box.
Yeah.
And then everything gets really confusing. But there are a couple of things I really like about the way it depicted time travel. Number one is that it depicts it, the technology aspect, the machine they build, feels like a real project. You know, you see the scenes where they're designing it, and it doesn't sound like a bunch of sci-fi magic talk.
Right.
You feel like these are
engineers.
Yeah, they're real engineers who are talking about the kinds of problems engineers encounter when they're building a machine.
Right.
Number two, the thing I like about it is that it's the thing I said before, it gets really confusing.
Yeah.
Once they keep using the machine, it's hard to keep track of what's going on.
It's a movie that challenges you too, because if you aren't willing to really pay attention and listen and try and be engaged, you could be lost before there's any time travel at all. In fact, you can be lost before you realize what the heck they're trying to build.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right, Lauren, what about you? Do you have a time travel, like a favorite kind of depiction of time travel?
Well, I think that probably the closest to what will eventually be reality is what The Simpsons portrayed in the Treehouse of Horrors episode, Time and Punishment.
Yes!
Yeah.
Which, of course, was kind of based on the old Bradbury story, A Sound of Thunder.
Now, is that the one where Homer goes back in time, accidentally steps on a butterfly and changes everything?
Right. Comes back to the present and winds up in what seems to be this amazing, perfect dimension.
Right. And everyone's got lizard mouths or.
Well, but he goes like, they're all like rich and fabulous. And he's like, Marge, give me a donut. And she's like, what's a donut? And then he leaves and then starts
raining
from
again.
The sky. It's raining again.
Yeah. My favorite part of that one is where he goes back in time and just starts killing things randomly.
But that also does try to sort of address a real issue that's possible with time travel. Yeah. Were time travel a reality? And you were to go way back and change some small thing, you have no idea how much of an effect that might have in the future.
True. Now, before we get off too far down that road, because we are going to address that, it's my turn.
Yeah, what's yours, Jonathan?
Yeah, what's yours?
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
That's
because
true.
San Dimas High School football rules.
Yeah, I actually was just reading about how scientists at MIT are working on a time-traveling telephone booth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
It's powered by George Carlin magic.
I was about to say, I mean, this has to involve George Carlin.
Sadly, and very short supply now.
Well, I mean, just because he's passed away in this current time, if it's a time machine, then that should be no problem.
Right.
Okay. So time travel is really fun for the movies, especially because it creates all of these weird questions. We have no experience with which to compare it to.
Right.
So you can almost try anything.
Yes. And we, of course, have talked about time in a previous episode. We were really talking about time and general relativity and special relativity. And so we're not going to go too far into that, but we will give a little bit of a refresher so that we can have at least a kind of an agreed upon foundation upon which we will build our contraption of time machine that'll fall apart at a moment's notice.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about time travel today. Is it possible? If it is possible, how might it work? And if it does actually work, what would it mean?
Well, it depends on how you define it, because if you just define it as traveling through time, technically we're all doing that.
Right. Your body is a
cosmonauts,
time machine.
Not cosmonauts, chrononauts.
Yeah, we are chrononauts. Yeah.
That's a great term.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. You just have to be and you go through time. All right. So first of all, defining time. We mentioned in our previous episode, it's really hard to do that without it becoming this kind of crazy recursive, tautological definition. So
yeah, Einstein said time is what you read on a clock.
Yeah. one definition you could apply is say it's the rate of change in the universe. And this is not something that is globally consistent or universally consistent. In other words, you can actually have very localized rates of change that are much different than on the universal scale. As it turns out, time is in fact relative. It is different depending upon your perspective.
And that doesn't just mean it seems relative to different people, you know, based on how long it feels like this horrible movie has been going on or this lecture or something. It's measurably relative. Like, it actually changes depending on how close you are to, say, massive objects or how fast you're going.
Right. Yes.
Oh, right. That's a gravitational time dilation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And both of these, you know, gravitational time dilation and the speed at which you're traveling, those two effects are what make it necessary for us to have satellites that correct their time gradually, because as it turns out, the time on their clocks passes at a different rate than the time on our clocks down here on the ground level, right? So even if you were to take a fast airplane trip and you had a very precise clock on board the airplane, when you landed and you compared that against another clock that had been started at the exact same time, has that same level of precision, you would see that time had passed at slightly different rates, not a lot. I mean, it's not like you land and you land an hour earlier than what you would have landed if the hadn't gone, well, not just speed, but the fact that time is actually passing at a different rate for you. But it is a tiny amount. It's measurable. With satellites, it's a little bit more important, because one, the effect is larger, and two, we're depending upon satellites for things like GPS. And if your time isn't exact, if you haven't corrected for this time dilation, you're not going to get an accurate reading of where you are on Earth based upon those GPS readings. So we already see dilation in effect on, today. It's not like it's just hypothetical.
Yeah, it's definitely just an accepted fact of science. But despite the fact that time is relative and influenced by things like nearby massive objects and the speed at which an object is traveling, one thing that we do seem to know about it is that it only seems to move in one direction.
Right, right. We don't seem to... cause and effect goes in one way, right? You don't have an effect and then later a cause happens. You have a cause, and then the effect happens.
It's sort of the arrow of time.
Yeah, and it points in only one direction as far as we can determine, at least intuitively. Mathematically, it's a different matter, I suppose. But first, I would also mention that time travel inherently has a paradox attached to it, which is that you get two different, completely different experiences of time, at least based on the type of time travel where there's some time passing for the traveler as well as for the rest of the universe. So in other words, Joe, if you decide to go back into the past and you're taking some sort of trip where, like, let's say it's the TARDIS from Doctor Who, there's actually time that passes for you as you take this journey. So you're leaving today and you're going back 200 years into the past.
And it doesn't take that long. I mean, there's basically just a series of whoop, whoop, whoops, and then you land.
But it's not instantaneous.
Right.
So you experience time moving forward. To an independent observer, who I guess has been around for a few centuries, they will remember the fact that you arrived before you departed. So that's two different experiences of time.
My question would be, if there really is this kind of movie-style traveling backward through time motion, where are you physically in that time?
Well, I mean, space and time are very much connected.
You know,
we have this whole idea of the space-time continuum, but where is not so much of an issue as when, as it turns out. Because at least with the Doctor's TARDIS, it travels both through space and time. If you're in a DeLorean going 88 miles per hour, somehow you're magically in the right place, the right region as you would have been had somehow you managed to track the Earth where it was needed to be.
Yeah, that thing is what always mixes me up about a lot of this time travel stuff. Right. I mean, in addition to many other things that mix me up about time travel.
Like the DeLorean doesn't just appear in the cold reaches of space and Marty McFly immediately perishes.
Look, Doc Brown is a really smart guy.
Yeah.
But with that kind of essential paradox, even the very small differences in time that happen between us and our satellites, for example, are actually really hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
So anything as large as time travel is necessarily problematic. Okay. Whack, I think, is the accepted scientific term.
Yeah.
Quite whack.
Yes. Its whackness is sufficient. It's enough of a whackness to actually detect with the naked eye.
Okay, so I've got a question.
Yes.
Does time travel, is there any way we could just rule it out at the beginning to say, no, we just know it's not possible because it violates some law that we're almost positive cannot be violated?
All right, to answer that question, first of all, spoiler alert, according to at least some mathematical models, time travel is at least hypothetically possible, but there's still some things that we have to talk about. For example, the law of conservation. Now, we've heard this, right? The idea that you cannot create nor destroy matter or energy. You can convert one into the other, but you cannot actually destroy it or create it, right?
You can't make energy disappear.
Yeah, or matter.
You can convert energy into less useful states.
Sure.
But it's never going away.
Right. So in other words, when we are, we talk about how systems lose energy. They don't really lose energy so much as they produce other forms of energy that aren't as useful.
Excrete it out into the environment.
They're pooping out heat, essentially, is what they're
generally
doing.
Generally, heat, which is hard to harness, is just diffused.
Right. So that law of conservation suggests that there's a problem with time travel, and that problem is this. If I send something into the past, whether it's a person or an object or a time machine, whatever it is, then that thing will suddenly be in a time where it wasn't before. That seems to suggest that I am actually creating more matter at that moment in time in that space-time region than was there before. Does that violate the law of conservation?
Or more so than even just creating a really weird time sonic boom.
Yeah. The fact that something is there that wasn't there before. You had a certain amount of matter in that region, and now there's more matter, and it wasn't that you converted energy, it's that you've produced it. I can tell you what the general answer to this is about how they get around it, which is the idea that in an infinite and unbounded universe, you have regions where conservation takes place, but it's not a global thing. It's not applied across the entirety of the universe. It's kind of complicated, but it's assuming that there is an infinite universe, and therefore you're not really creating more matter because the concept of infinite alone means infinite. like there's no more to infinite. You've got that alone is, it's meaningless.
You're not creating a lack or additional,
now,
right.
But localized, it would be a problem. But if you look at the universe as a whole as a system and consider it infinite and unbounded, you don't apply that law in that instant. So that's the way of getting around it. Yeah, it's kind of a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about today with these time travel rules and the ways to get around it. It reminds me a lot of if you've ever played a pencil and paper role-playing game.
I knew you were going to say that.
And you've got one of those players who's trying to find a way around every rule in the game, and that's the way they play the game.
You guys have friends who don't play the game that way? I thought that was the entire point of the game.
I've had games where people didn't do that, and they were magical. But at any rate, so another thing we can talk about, is it violating space itself? And according to some models of general relativity, time travel is possible through something called a closed time-like curve, or CTC, which are, quote, world lines that end at the same point in space and time as they begin. And we'll talk more about what CTCs are and how you might be able to travel through time, backwards through time, in fact, because a lot of people say, oh, well, time travel would be possible if you're talking about traveling into the future, but traveling into the past is problematic. I mean, especially if you think about using special relativity. So you're just talking about moving really, really fast. So to you, time passes at a different rate than it does to someone on some other, you know, moving body.
Right. If they were to look at you, you would appear to be moving in slow motion.
Right. And you would see everything sped up back home. So, for instance, if we're talking about here on Earth and Joe leaves to go on an interstellar super fast joyride, he might go for a year and be traveling at almost the speed of light and return to Earth, and it'll be like two centuries have passed. But to him, a year has passed. Now, to that you could argue is sort of like
basically traveling into the future.
Yeah, it's like traveling into the future for you, Joe. For the rest of us, it's just like, boy, Joe, you remember him? Whatever happened to that guy? And then maybe someday our descendants would be like, oh, you're this Joe guy who never shows up to things. But at any rate, the CTCs would allow you to travel back in time, assuming that they are actually in play in this particular model of general relativity. And we'll get into that in a little bit.
Okay. I've got one.
Okay.
What about basic causality?
What?
I mean, you've heard of the grandfather paradox.
Yes.
Obviously, yes. You have.
Yeah. I wrote the notes.
Right.
Well, okay, so the grandfather paradox is a fun one. This is a very common one that's mentioned. There are a lot of different variations as well, but the easy way of saying it is imagine that time travel is in fact possible, where you can go back into time.
Yeah.
And then you go back in time, you're an assassin, and you have a specific target that you have to hit in the past. You travel back in time, and your target is 18 years old. And you assassinate your target. But it turns out your target was actually your grandfather. Your grandfather didn't have kids until he was, in his 20s. So you have killed your grandfather before your mother or dad were born, which means that you wouldn't have been born, which means you couldn't have gone into the past, which means you couldn't have killed your grandfather. Thus, the paradox.
Now, we're not saying there's any reason this would need to arise, but if traveling into the past really were possible, why shouldn't you be able to do something like this?
Well, again, if through your action you end up negating the ability to even go back in the first place, that's the paradox, right?
Right.
You've created an incoherent loop is what it's called. It's something that could not continue once it happens. Like once you were successful in doing whatever the task is, and it doesn't have to be kill your grandfather. That's the paradox. But there are a lot of different variations. Generally speaking, what they're saying is, even if time travel were possible, you probably couldn't go back and change anything, because if you did, then it could negate the possibility of you traveling back in time in the first place. So there's an argument that extends from that, saying that maybe there's no way to affect the past at all.
But that also seems like a problem to me, because by appearing in a place, I mean, even if you don't really do much of anything, you're still affecting it. Right. I mean,
just by your state of existence there. Sure. It's that accidentally stepping on a butterfly thing and creating a universe where it rains donuts.
Yeah. It seems like it wouldn't be possible to go to a place without having any effect.
Well, there's some interesting ways around this one, too. One is suggesting that you would be able to do whatever you wanted. It's just whatever you did happens to be whatever has happened anyway.
That makes more sense to me.
So in other words, it's not that you are prevented from doing things. It's that whatever you choose to do is what has happened already.
And what led to the state of the universe that allowed you to travel back in time in the first place.
Yeah, now this becomes a coherent causal loop where you end up having, you can have variations on this where the only way it could have happened is if you had traveled into the past. Which I love these two. They're very popular in science fiction.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the big ones that seems to emphasize the strangeness of this kind of loop would be, what if you only know how to invent a time machine because a time traveler from the future came back and showed you how to invent a time machine?
Yeah, yeah, and there's another great example. In fact, I'll go ahead and say it. Let's just say that, Lauren, you have created a way of you've gone to the future. You've got a time machine where you can actually move into the future.
Uh-huh, I do. Yeah.
And you steal from the future an amazing device. And this
I steal things all the time,
yeah,
mostly from the future.
Yeah, so
it's a really cute nutcracker looks like a squirrel from an antique store.
I have a specific example.
Okay, what is it?
Lauren.
Also the squirrel thing, though, yeah.
Lauren, the chronographer kleptomaniac... steals a device that turns grape jelly into strawberry jam. And she travels back in time to present day and starts to thus turn all the grape jelly into strawberry jam. and she loves it. She's fantastic. Yes. And then on, as she's, you know, she's traveled far into the future to get this amazing device. On her deathbed, many, many, many years into the future, she then gifts this device to a little vagabond. And the vagabond, it turns out, ends up being the quote unquote inventor of this device. In other words, this device was never actually invented. It only exists in this loop of time.
It's weird, right? Where
it turns out that the adult version of this vagabond is the person from whom Lauren stole the device in the first place. And this device only exists within this closed time loop from that perspective.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to make any sense because in that case, the device was never actually built.
Yeah.
It always existed.
It just existed.
Exactly. Yeah, see, it's another one of those kind of, and if you've ever read any Heinlein has got a billion stories that involve this kind of closed loop where nothing in the story could have happened unless this other thing that hasn't happened had already happened. It just gets more and more confusing as it goes along.
I think it's much more likely that that grape to strawberry jam converters are a universal constant. And that therefore,
that they have to exist.
They must exist.
They must at some point exist.
Right. I also am very fond of the theory that, that the universe kind of equalizes anything that you would do or try to do in the past.
Right.
Like if you went back and tried to shoot your grandfather, that the gun would misfire.
Right.
Or that suddenly a strong breeze would throw the bullet off course.
Right. Or that a weird reflection got in your eyes and messed up your aim. But the idea being that the universe itself counteracts anything you try to do and thus prevents it from happening.
I can see that if you're just saying, like, this is another way of saying that whatever you go back and change is what already happened. If you're talking about the universe having, like, an active deterrent mechanism, that seems only possible if you're positing, like, time travel police ghosts.
I think that Final Destination has proven beyond a doubt to us that this kind of thing happens
all the time. Great documentary series.
Yeah.
But also, it doesn't necessarily have to be conscious. It just has to, again, it's very similar to, this is what has happened, therefore this is what will happen if you were to go into the past. But another interesting idea that tries, you know, one way you can try and get around this is sort of similar to what you were talking about with The Simpsons, Lauren, this idea of parallel timelines.
This is what it's like in Back to the Future in a lot of stories like
this.
You go back and you change something. It doesn't have to be incorporated into the future you've already experienced. You create a new future.
It's right. Branched.
You split off.
So in this sense, some people say, well, technically you're not altering the past so much as avoiding the present. In other words, the present.
I avoid the present every day.
The present that you are from, let's say, you have left the present. You've gone into the past. You've made a change in the past that would affect your present. The one that you came from, it splits off the timeline. And now you are in a parallel timeline where the change that you made is fact. It's historical fact. And so therefore, whatever your present will be now, it'll be different from what it was in the timeline you left. But the timeline you left could theoretically still be going on. It's just now it doesn't have you in it because you left.
Yeah. And I guess you probably wouldn't be able to get back, would you?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
hypothetically. I mean, I think that if you can get over there in the first place, then there is surely a clause in which you can get back.
But. If you were to go back even further into your timeline so that you could stop yourself when you appear the first time in order to change the timeline and thus prevent yourself from changing the timeline by going back and changing it again, maybe... I don't know. I need to have like some trees, you know, to illustrate all this on. But yeah, again, some people say that this ends up being some sort of universe hopping as opposed to time travel in the purest sense of being able to go into the past and change things around.
Okay, well, let's just say maybe one of these things really can happen. Now, we've accepted that based on relativistic physics, you probably could travel into the future. That's not really the problem. We're talking about traveling back in time. How would you actually do it? If one of these models, any of them, at least one of them works, what's the way you get there?
Because this is a thing that legit physicists have legit thought about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some not just physicists, but also philosophers who have really talked about, you know, what is the likelihood of this? And if it's possible, how would it be possible? And some of the models are, you know, hypothetically possible, but not practical, right? And actually, I'd say all of them aren't, because if they were practical, we would have totally been doing them already.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least tested them. But one of them would be using what are called KERR black holes, K-E-R-R, or KERR rings, not caring, but KERR right. rings. So this is after a physicist named Roy KERR, who proposed this back in 1963, and talked about the concept of a rotating black hole. That would be a KERR black hole. And if you're looking for size, it would be about the size of Manhattan, but it would have the mass of our sun. So it'd be incredibly dense.
You know, yeah.
Sun is obviously much larger than the Earth. So for it to be reduced in size to the size of Manhattan, but retain its mass, incredibly dense. So the idea of a KERR ring is a ring of collapsed neutron stars that are spinning with enough rotational force that at least in theory, they would never create a singularity. Now, the singularity is that point of infinite density, that point that has zero length, infinite mass, so you would never be able to escape from it. Light itself cannot escape from it. That's not the same as Event Horizon, which is a great movie that we watched for tech stuff.
Yes.
But it's also Event Horizon is also the zone around a black hole. That's the point of no return.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is why it's a terrible idea to name your spaceship after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's by
like,
the way,
don't name that, guys. Don't name your cruise ship Iceberg, and don't name your spaceship Event Horizon. But yeah, so the idea with the KERR ring is that perhaps there would not be a singularity at all. This rotational force would end up preventing that from happening, and the idea is that you might. And I stress might be able to pass through such a thing in a spacecraft and not be spaghettified and crushed and killed as a result. And the idea would be that you would be spit out of the other end, which essentially would be what is in theory called a white hole. I say in theory because we haven't observed one.
These might not actually exist at all.
Yeah, yeah. One of the ideas is that a white hole is essentially, I mean, that's like the opposite of a black hole. It's where stuff is being spouted out, like matter and energy is coming out of this. Black hole would be one end of it and white hole would be the other end of it. But while we've observed the black holes, the white holes are still something we don't really see.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around that. What would be the opposite of a black hole? It seems like it'd be something like a little Big Bang, kind of, wouldn't it?
Like a continual Big Bang.
Yeah, singularity expanding outward, putting energy and mass
out. I would just think of it as the other end of a pipe. So wormhole is kind of similar in a way. But again, we haven't observed white holes.
Right.
One of the other theories is that black holes are kind of a window into another universe, right? The idea being that there's some sort of hole through our space-time that connects to some other perhaps space-time, perhaps it's something we can't even fathom because it's so different from our universe. But one of the counter-arguments against that is that, well, does that mean our universe is exit-only because we can't find any entrances? We don't see any of the what we would imagine would be the opposite of that, where stuff is coming from somewhere else. Although you could argue that maybe dark matter and dark energy are somewhere in there because we can't directly observe those. At any rate, there's the possibility that you could fly through one of these black holes and thus travel through time, either in the future or in the past, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to control that at all. So it'd just be kind of wherever and whenever you end up, that's where and when you are.
It's like when the kid goes to make a suicide at the fountain drink machine, except
right.
you're doing that with time and space.
Yeah, you got a blindfold on. You don't know how much lemonade versus Dr. Pepper you're putting in that mix.
Right.
It could be delicious or it could be noxious. Yeah. Similarly, there's the wormhole approach that I just mentioned. So wormhole essentially is curvature of the space-time into a tunnel where going in through one side and popping out the other side, you would end up in a totally different area of space-time.
Okay, so give us the real scoop. Wormholes, they're in all these movies, and they're just magic tunnels, basically.
Well, in the movies, they're magic tunnels, yeah.
Yeah, what's the real deal with a wormhole?
They exist. In fact, wormholes...
Well, we think they exist.
Well,
again,
I mean,
we haven't observed them, but mathematically, Einstein and Rosen, who were two pretty smart dudes, said...
Not that smart.
said that it's logical that they exist.
Yeah, if you'd look at it as like a teeny tiny lasting for a split second basis in large particle accelerators, they technically exist.
If you didn't hear me rolling my eyes, I just rolled them really hard. And not that that isn't true. That is extremely true and wonderful and beautiful and not particularly useful to the conversation that we're having right now. Because first of all, none of us are atom-sized. And second of all, we exist in periods longer than nanoseconds.
A fraction of a second. Okay. So, well, I'm just being pedantic. So, but yes, your point stands, Lauren. We have never observed any kind of wormhole. In fact, there may not be a style of wormhole where you could create something that has stability that would allow you to actually pass through it, that would have the size and duration necessary for that to happen. Nor do we really know what would happen if we were to pass through it. One, we don't know.
To the Delta Quadrant.
you end up being in the arguably the least popular of the Star Trek series on, I guess, Enterprise probably gives it a run for its money.
But, or on a living ship using the word frill a whole lot. Right. Either one of those can occur.
But at any rate, the issue is we don't know, one, if it's even possible to create a wormhole or to find a wormhole in nature that would allow us to pass through it. We don't know what would happen to us if we did pass through it. And again, you wouldn't have the control, right? Unless you were able to fold space-time itself specifically to your desires, you would not be able to determine where and when you would come out the other side, yet again, kind of like the black hole. So it might be a way of traveling through time, but again, it may not be practical. And, you know, in order to imagine this is always the hardest thing for me to imagine, because you have to think of space-time. It's a four-dimensional construct as we understand it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and I've seen some pretty interesting like gifs of this on the internet, but I understand that that is not really an accurate depiction. I have a hard enough time perceiving three dimensions,
yeah.
And when you add the fourth in there, I'm like, bling.
Yeah, yeah, because it's easy enough if we reduce it to two, right? If we think of the standard example is you have two people holding a sheet taut between them, and then on top of the sheet you lay some sort of object that has mass that pulls the sheet down, right? The sheet curves around the object. So even when you're holding it tightly, you see it where it's dipping down. Depending upon the mass or the weight of the object, that determines how much curve you get. Well, the same thing happens in four-dimensional space-time. So space itself curves around massive objects, and time does too. It's just really hard to imagine that. For one thing, you know, even if you're able to imagine it in some kind of abstract three-dimensional way, adding a fourth dimension, like you said, Lauren, really hard. I mean, it baffles me.
Sure. And especially once you get past the concept of just a sheet curved by like a bowling ball, for example.
Right.
Further, in order to make a wormhole, you have to punch through the sheet with the bowling ball to perhaps another parallel sheet beneath it, or maybe a little bit of the sheet that's on the floor underneath it. And then there's like stars involved, and I don't follow.
Well, technically, you could wrap the sheet around the bowling ball and thus create a tunnel that way. Although I don't know that that makes it any more useful.
Another way of maybe thinking about it, now tell me if this is totally off, is you drill a hole in an apple, and so if you imagine the two-dimensional surface of this apple is actually the three-dimensional space world, and that third dimension of the apple is the fourth dimension of time. You can sort of go through from one side of the apple to the other.
Sure.
Yeah, I can't wait for your time travel movie, and you're going to call it The Core and then be disappointed.
Oh, no.
Disappointed to find out there's already a movie called that.
Yeah, and there's already a worm in there.
Yeah, that's true. So, anyway, wormholes, again, very much a hypothetical when it comes to time travel. There's also the closed time-like curves that we mentioned earlier. So, this is, an interesting concept. Comes back to another big thinker.
Right. It's not a new concept. Some of the ways of explaining how to make it work are very new, but it might date back as far as like the 1940s with Kurt Gödel, who was a buddy of Albert Einstein, a pretty smart and a little bit nutty mathematician.
Yeah.
Who was talking about the geometry and movement of the universe and put forth the idea that these loops might exist. Like if you had a long enough journey due to the way that the universe, he thought, might spin, that you could loop back on time.
Right. And then we have the entrance of string theory into the idea of these closed time-like curves. So string theory, we're not going to go too far into it. We could do a whole episode on string theory too. But string theory, you can imagine that all matter in the universe, and talking about all the way down to subatomic particles, is made up of these strings that are either open-ended or they're closed in loops. And they vibrate in different ways. And, you know, supersymmetrical string theory suggests that the vibrations of the strings are what determine what kind of subatomic particle gets represented. For instance, protons vibrate, the strings vibrate one way, electrons, they vibrate another way. Anyway, one of the concepts here is that by using cosmic strings, either two of them very close together or one sort of attached to a black hole, you could put them under such pressure that you create this closed time-like curve in the universe, which if you were to travel using this closed time-like curve, you could move back to the point of origin in both space and time when that curve was created. So you could travel back in time up to the point when that curve was created. You could not travel further back because the curve wasn't around before then.
Right. Unless a dinosaur did this for you, you couldn't go back to the
time of dinosaurs. Right. Exactly. So in other words, if I built one today, the furthest back I could travel would be today. I wouldn't be able to go back to yesterday, but any time from here forward, assuming I have a way of harnessing that, I could travel backward. This could become really useful if you have a short-term plan of making a lot of mistakes and you want to be able to go back and try a lot of different options before you settle on whichever one is going to be the least harmful of all the mistakes you're going to make.
Sort of like creating a save point.
Yes, exactly. Yes, you've got like three doors ahead of you, and you know two of them lead to certain death.
But wait a second. Every time you go back a few minutes, is there another one of you there that you have to kill before you can make the decision?
An excellent question. I don't know the answer to that. You know, again, this ends up being very much hypothetical. Obviously, no one has actually created one of these closed time-like curves that they could travel around it and go back into time. And so it's, again, very much kind of a philosophical and scholarly discussion, not a practical discussion.
Okay, so I want to raise an issue, which is that all of these things that seem even remotely close to plausible do not happen to be the kind of machines you can build in your garage, like in the
very Victorian kind of looking
or primer, like I brought up earlier. You know, some people in their garage want to build a time machine. It doesn't seem like that's the kind of thing that lets you travel through time.
The closest is the closed time-like curve, where you wouldn't be building one of those in your garage, but maybe you're building a spaceship in your garage.
Yeah, okay.
It's about as close as you
can
get.
Well, I guess you could build a spaceship in your garage to go to a Kerr ring, you know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not a time machine in the sense of, like, you set a dial to 1957.
Right. I wonder if this is because time itself exists in a relativistic framework and you might need relativistic forces, which means really, really huge or really, really energetic in order to manipulate it.
Yeah, there's some studies that have suggested that if you wanted a time machine, you would have to harness the equivalent amount of power that you would find in a galaxy in order to make it work, which is not necessarily practical. We think we have energy problems now. But when it comes to, you know, I want to go back to last Thursday, but I need to harness the power of an entire galaxy to do it.
It's certainly not convenient from your garage.
No.
Okay, so folks, if you want to know what we have to do in order to create time travel, go listen to our episode on the Kardashev scale. We need to get to Kardashev level 3, and then we'll have time travel.
Well, assuming that no one else wants to do anything.
Right.
Like, hey, guys, I know you're really crazy about your iPhones and your Kindles and your internets, but we're going to turn all that off so I can go back to last
Thursday. Turn off the galactic irrigation systems and all the life support.
Now, what if all this talk is truly moot? What if there is no such thing as the future or the past, only the now?
Well, that was Kurt Gödel's idea, actually. He suggested that the end result of his model of the universe, which branched, by the way, from Einstein's theory of general relativity, is that since time travel is hypothetically possible within the realms of physics as we understand them, therefore time itself as we understand it cannot exist.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that's the idea is that nothing is ever really in the past or in the future because time travel can exist. And therefore the past and future don't exist.
So in other words, it'd be that you would get in a time time travel device, but you'd have no destination to go to. There'd be no place to go to because there is no past in the sense of a point in space-time that still is relevant.
I'd argue there is no present.
That there is no now. Well, you know what? Einstein would agree with you in the sense that simultaneity is a concept that doesn't work in Einstein's model with general relativity because it all depends upon your point of reference.
Because it's subjective, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and if you actually just sit down and try to think, okay, what is happening now? There is no now. I mean, the more you try to examine the idea of an instant of now, it just slips through your fingers.
It's another one of those things where, you know, in order you sit there and think of it on the scale of, all right, let's take a unit of time. Let's say it's a minute. All right, well, let's break that down. What's happening this very second? And then you think, wait, you know, you can actually break a second down into smaller and smaller slivers. And you just keep thinking that, well, technically you can just keep reducing by half over and over
it's
and over
of
again.
Zeno's paradox sort of thing.
Yeah, you get to a point where it's not perceptible by humans by any stretch of the imagination, but it's still mathematically happening
and it's still significant in a mathematical sense, right?
Yeah, so then you think, well, wait a minute, how did I ever get from, especially when you start getting really far away from units of time that we can perceive, you think, how is anything ever happening ever?
Well, yeah, I mean, when the past nanosecond transitions to the next nanosecond, what's now in between them?
See, that's where a lot of other science fiction comes in, where you have entire worlds that are existing and growing and falling apart in the time between the seconds. So it's they're existing in a way that is imperceptible to the rest of us because we only see the seconds. We can't see what's in between them. It's great stuff. But anyway, the point being that when it comes down to, is time travel possible? Will we ever see time travel? There's still a lot of disagreement on it, you know. Mathematically, according to the laws of physics as we understand them, including Einstein's theories of relativity, there's nothing that expressly forbids it from being possible.
Well, again, I want to stick with what I said earlier, is that I feel pretty good about time travel into the future. I'm very skeptical about time travel into the past.
Well, especially since, you know, as far as we can say, there's no evidence that we can point to that it's ever happened before, and you would imagine that if it's in fact possible, someone from the future would have traveled back in time. There are counter arguments against that, too.
But you can find them posting on the internet, time travelers from the
future.
Oh,
let's not go into that. I've done a whole podcast about that. But, you know, the classic argument is that if time travel ever is possible to go, you know, if it's ever possible to travel back into the past, then some time traveler from the future needs to come back to this time when we're recording this right now and knock on our door right now. Oh, son of a... No, that was me. I'm just kidding. No one was actually at the door. No, but that's the argument.
Wouldn't it be
right?
Great, though, if some horrible reptilian did bust in and say, I'm sick of you making fun of us.
Well, that would be you too. I'd be like, hey, look, for the record, I did not make fun of reptilians.
Yeah, no, that would be you and me, Joe.
Yeah. So really,
our legacy.
All you're telling me is reptilian trouble.
You're just telling me I got to get new co-hosts. All right. So anyway, do you guys have anything else you want to say about time travel? I mean, this is one of those fun things to talk about because, you start feeling pretty confident, right? The stuff that you can intuitively grasp, you're zooming along and like, okay, this makes sense. Then you start getting into some of the math and you think, okay, wait. Intuitively, that makes no sense, even though the math itself works out. And then the further you go, the more you're like, okay, now I don't even know what I'm thinking anymore.
Our intuitions are great when we need to get the groceries. They are not very good when we need to solve questions about time and space.
Yeah, it's very true. Things on the cosmological scale and on the quantum scale often they defy our intuition because our experience is not on those scales.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason our ancestors on this planet ever had to think about time travel.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's that monolith just appeared, and then you just go from there. Well, anyway, that wraps up our discussion on time travel. So the jury's still out, technically. Again, mathematically, there's nothing that specifically says this is completely off limits. Practically, could very well be that there's no practical way to do it. And certainly we don't have any evidence of it that we can point to.
And even if there is a practical way to do it, that practical is in extreme scare quotes because practical, like blowing up a galaxy, is not necessarily.
Right. That's that's not in my book, that doesn't fall under the category of practical. But anyway, if you guys have any suggestions for future episodes, you've got some sort of futuristic topic you think we should tackle, let us know. Send us an email. Our address is fwthinking@discovery.com, or drop us a line on the social networks we frequent. Those include Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. We have the handle fwthinking at all three of those. And we will talk to you again in the future, or maybe in the past.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.